welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And this is our 83rd episode. And welcome back. Thanks so much for tuning in for another episode. We hope you've been well. So we have been busy, still settling into this house. I can't believe we've been here for over 6 months now. That is insane.
Honestly, every single time I feel like I'm getting more settled in, I realize it's not even close to happening. There's so much to do, so much I want to do. And yet, with the basement just being finished now, for context, that's where we have our vegan protein slash home gym. We just moved our equipment in from the garage to the basement, and it's really starting to feel like home.
Yeah, it was several months with the contractors. Like, it must be really hard for contractors right now, and materials are hard to get, and they're expensive. So we've been having it worked on since October, I believe, and we just got it finished in the last couple weeks. So I actually just had my first official workout in the gym yesterday, and it was awesome. It's a little tight, it's a little smaller than our last couple of home gyms, but I'm still very excited about it. It's definitely our prettiest home gym.
I'm curious to know how it feels to train in there. Right now, I've had one photo shoot. You had a photo shoot down there as well, and I've been practicing posing, but I haven't trained in the gym yet.
Yeah, Giacomo's looking really lean lately, like super, super lean. He hasn't even started prep, and he's already mad lean.
Meanwhile, I'm focused on the finish line the whole time, and I'm saying to myself, you could be leaner, because obviously I'm going to be. I'm starting this prep where I ended up, as far as leanness goes, for my competition season, my last one 4 years ago. So my head is there, and then I looked at the photos as the photographer was taking it, and I'm like, man, I'm lean, like really lean. It's crazy. I mean, I've been doing this for how many years, and yet I still get in my own way as far as seeing what's actually happening.
And I've been telling him for quite a while, like, oh my God, why are you so lean at the start of your prep? And he's like, I'm not that lean. And then he saw pictures and he was like, I am that lean.
Well,
so that's kind of funny.
I think the truth of it is that if I think I'm too lean, I think psychologically I'll feel like I'm fragile or weak. And I just want to mentally, mindset-wise, think, okay, I'm not that lean, so I can push. Because in the past, like when you get really lean, you just get weaker and can't move as well, and you become more fatigued. So I think I'm just trying to psych myself out.
So before we get into this episode, I want to let you know that we have a new gift for everybody in the community that wants it. I just wrapped up writing a 5-ingredient vegan proteins recipe book, and we will leave the link for that in the show notes. It's a free download, 14 recipes, most of them high in protein, all of them 5 ingredients or fewer, excluding like, you know, salt and pepper and stuff like that. So hope you guys like it. If you want it, go pick that up. It won't be around forever.
Today's episode is going to be, I always say this, an interesting one, but that's because hopefully you find what we talk about as interesting as we find it. This episode is one that's been a long time in the making, something you've asked us for, our backstories. Today is going to be about Danny's backstory. Obviously, how it pertains to her fitness journey and what brought her here.
I'm nervous. I'm nervous as hell to record this. Giacomo can see it. I'm like, my palms are sweaty to record this. So that should tell you something.
Well, there's a lot that I know, and hopefully that'll help navigate the conversation. But there's also a lot that I don't know. So I'm really super curious to hear from you. Why don't we walk it back to when you were a child? What was life like for you as far as, I don't know, in general, what was it like?
So every interview I've ever done and every podcast I've ever done and every speech I've ever done, I always start the story the same way, which was I grew up without a lot of money. And I kind of just leave it there and talk about how, you know, we didn't eat good food because healthy food is expensive. So I didn't eat a lot of healthy food. And that is all true, but it's only a small bit of the truth. So we did not grow up with a lot of money, but in theory, we should have had enough money. My dad was employed. He was a police officer. Before I even start talking about any of this stuff, I think it's really important for me to say that I have come so far in the way that I'm able to look back on my life and the way that I see the people in my life. You know, I know that in telling some of this story, people are going to think that my parents are some sort of villains, and I can understand why people would think that, but I've thought about this more than anybody, and I have come to learn that they are just flawed humans, like everybody is a flawed human, and they were just doing the best that they could in the situation that they were in, and, you know, it was far, far, far from perfect. If I can reach a point where I was able to forgive them and ultimately have good relationships with them, I think that should say something. I think that's really important to just lead with that. In every podcast and interview and live talk that I give, I always start the story the same way. And I say, I grew up in a family that didn't have a lot of money. And the purpose of saying this is to illustrate that, you know, we didn't eat well. We didn't eat healthy food, because healthy food is expensive, so we ate a lot of really cheap food. And this led me to be unhealthy and overweight and blah, blah, blah. My story goes on from there. And all of that is true. Not one word of that is a lie, but it is such a skimming of the surface of things. It is such a polished and presentable way of talking about some of the ways that I grew up, because that is palatable, that is relevant to the market that I work in, which is fitness and helping other people become fit, but it leaves out so goddamned much that still shapes my philosophy and the way that I view the world today and coach people and help people, and it's where I'm coming from always. I grew up in a violent and abusive and neglectful household, and I do not say that lightly. We didn't have a lot of money, but in theory we should have had enough money because both of my parents worked. My dad was a police officer. You know, I know that they don't make a ton of money, but it was the 90s and it made enough money. But the way that we spent our money was in such a way that we didn't have money for food, good healthy food, or nice clothes, or et cetera, et cetera. I grew up poor.
You mentioned violence, you mentioned abuse, and you mentioned neglect, and then you mentioned not having access to food, right? I think the obvious thing to gather from here is, well, okay, so you didn't have access to healthy food or the food that you needed to be healthy, but can you speak more to how that felt?
I didn't even care. I mean, I didn't even know. When you're a kid, I didn't even know healthy food existed. I didn't even know that about these foods. And also, food was literally at the bottom of the list of anything that I was thinking of anyway. You know, if you think about like a hierarchy of needs, right? I don't remember the exact hierarchy of needs, but like shelter, safety, these are things that you think of significantly more than, does this cheeseburger that I'm eating have the most micronutrients that it possibly could? Like, first of all, find me a kid that thinks that anyway. Second of all, you don't care when you are literally worried about your own safety from minute to minute.
Okay, so you mentioned safety, and I feel like when things are not safe growing up, it can be a little harder to put yourself in that moment, put yourself in those shoes in conversation. So why don't we think about, moreover, can you tell us about what it feels like to reflect on that now?
I was the oldest of three. I mean, I am the oldest of three. My sister is a year and a half younger than me. My brother is a year and a half younger than her. So we are all very close in age. We were like three musketeers, three peas in a pod. Like, we were always together. And that was my main concern as a kid, was keeping myself safe, keeping them safe as much as I could. But everybody's like, well, what are you keeping yourself safe from? Like, that's absolutely what everybody's thinking right now. Safety. Safety from what? The question is why? Why weren't you safe? That's the question. My father was an alcoholic, a hardcore alcoholic, and in many ways also a drug addict. Eventually, in that he also had mental health issues. He had borderline personality disorder, at the time diagnosed as bipolar, which in the 90s was actually called manic depressive. So he had wild, scary mood swings. And he was a very, very violent person and very physically, mentally, emotionally abusive for all of my young childhood towards myself, towards my sister, towards my brother, towards my mother. So that was the sort of shadow that hung over us my entire childhood. That was the number one thing on my mind.
Okay, so there was a lot of, and I'm putting it lightly, dysfunction at home. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that had an impact on how you were outside of the home.
I mean, I assume so. I loved school. I adored school. School was my favorite thing, especially when I was really young, because it was a chance to get away. And I was very, I was just bright. I was just a bright kid. So I always got to be in like the advanced groups, and sometimes they'd like sweep me away to another room and teach me and this like one other kid in our class a whole different thing than the rest of the class was learning. And it was awesome, and I felt special and unique in that. So I really looked forward to going to school every day.
Okay, so school felt a little more safe than at home?
Yeah, absolutely. Not to say that the schools didn't know what was going on. They did. They definitely did know what was going on with me at home. It was almost impossible not to know that. When I think about all of the people that knew, it was so many people that knew what was happening, that we were getting our asses beat like bad at home on a regular basis, and nobody did anything. And that only added to my worldview that like the world is not a safe place. People do not have your back. People are not looking out for you. And also, you know, it's not lost on me that what are kids taught? When something bad happens, who do you go to?
Parents.
Nope. If something bad happens, kids are told you go to the police. The police are there to protect you. Nope. They certainly weren't for me. My father was the police. His friends were the police. I saw them all in what they did on the weekends and the way that they talked. And I learned very, very young that from where I was sitting, the police were not there to protect me or anybody, it appeared to me. You know, that's another big thing that definitely shaped my worldview.
I remember when you and I first met, you used to talk about this a lot, and mostly what I felt coming off of you was anger and resentment. I think now in hindsight, perhaps you were just trying to make sure I got to know the person that I was with better. I kind of wonder how that affects you now, all of this, the lack of trust outside of home and outside of school as well in people. And of course, I don't want to say jaded, but your unique perspective on the world.
Well, there's a whole lot that happened between that and when I met you. I mean, and when I was 12 years old, we basically got away from my father. It was a big bloody crime scene mess with restraining orders, and it was horrific. It's not worth getting into the details, but it was horrifying. And I remember coming back from Christmas break in eighth grade, and everybody in the school knew what had happened because it was on the front page of the paper over Christmas break. That was really huge. But at that point, you know, essentially we had quote unquote gotten away. We were away and we were free. But that also means for the first time in my mother's life that she had an opportunity to have a life of her own, which she had never had. She definitely pursued that. And that meant, yes, we were free of this abuse, right, that had happened, but it also meant that we were now very much so left to our own devices, which 11, 12, and 13-year-olds should probably not be, one might argue. You know, it just felt like hopping from the frying pan into the fire in a totally different way. During this period, I would say, like, I don't know what kids in healthy households learn and when they learn it and all of that, but, you know, by the time you're 13, you're kind of learning how to care for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. And we weren't. There was a lot of catching up that I had to do by the time I finally came around to realizing how much work I had to do. That didn't happen for like another, I'd say, 5 or 6 years. So 5 or 6 years of being on your own, doing the things teenagers do. So I got into a lot of trouble. I hung with the not great crowd. I was the not great crowd. I was the one who, like, the kids weren't allowed to come to my house because they knew nobody was home. So lots of drugs, lots of drinking. By high school, I was not doing well in school at all, because I didn't go very often. I mean, I was very lucky that I still got really good grades. Like, I'd show up for test days and take them. By the time I graduated high school, I had missed an entire year of high school.
Yeah, you did the things that teenagers should do. They got into trouble and you did it without guidance. And I feel like
or that consequence. Was the difference. There was no consequences.
In theory, the consequences catch up to us all one day, eventually. And if they don't, well, what kind of quality of life is that, right? But clearly I don't want to say made a 180, right? You are who you are. Things changed for you at some point.
Yeah, it sounds insane. I know that what I'm about to say sounds insane, but believe it or not, it was going vegan that kickstarted the cascade of transformations for me. I'm not saying going vegan turned my life around because it's not that simple. Like I said, I've said in every interview, I was writing a research paper for an English class about vegetarianism, and I stumbled across a website about veganism, and that is what inspired me to go vegan. So one of the main things that I have left out by accident here in this story is that I was vegetarian from a very young age. From 8 years old, I didn't want to eat animals. And part of the reason for this was because we had animals growing up. We had dogs. I always had dogs growing up. And they were abused just like we were. They were kicked and punched and beat. I mean, beat till their teeth came out sometimes. One of my dogs, her name was Belle, she was hung. As a puppy. I mean, she wasn't even 2 years old, and she was not hung to death, but she was hung till something in her brain broke, something in her brain snapped, and she became really violent after that, you know? What a shock. You almost kill something, and then it turns against you. How shocking. And eventually, they put her down because she was dangerous at that point. And anyway, the point was, to me, it was clear that like the animals were being abused because they couldn't fight back, just like we were being abused because we couldn't fight back, just like chickens and cows were being used and killed because they couldn't fight back. And I didn't want to participate in that. So that's why I was vegetarian from so young. You know, there was also an incident with a lobster that I've told that story a bunch of times, and that's also true. But there's, you know, there's more to it that's not quite as palatable as that, I guess. Anyway, so when I became vegan in high school, which I think was my junior year of high school, I did it for ethical reasons. I didn't realize that chickens and cows, you know, dairy and eggs were as violent industries as they were. I didn't know. I'd never heard the word vegan, but I just gave it up overnight. It was doing that that first of all got me to start thinking about more of my actions and what was I doing and how could I kind of do better. And then when I went to the doctor for a checkup a few months later, they said that I had, you know, lost a bunch of weight, which makes sense because I was abusing food prior to that, prior to going vegan, because it was a comfort to me. You know, when you grow up without food, anytime you see food, you eat it. I'm actually going to do a whole video about how I think being raised in poverty can affect your relationship to food much later in your life. And that was one of the things. Like, you would think that somebody who was raised without access to a lot of food would be really thin and scrawny because they don't have a lot of food. But the fact of the matter is that when you don't have access to food, anytime you do have access to it, you like load up like a camel storing your hump. And again, generally very unhealthy foods. It's very easy to see how in this situation somebody could end up gaining a lot of weight, which I did. After I went to the doctor and they told me that I had lost some 30 pounds or something by accident, like I mentioned, I did not give a crap about my health at all. It was at the bottom of the list of things I cared about. But that's what got me started thinking that I had more control over my body in this case than I thought that I did. But that extended to a lot of areas of my life. I never felt like I had control of anything. Nothing was in my control. My life was constantly in somebody else's control. Going vegan was the first time I realized like something could be in my control.
This was more than a catalyst. This was a lifestyle change centered around veganism and what it meant to you, from the research paper to the seeing your body change without you even caring for the better, arguably. You felt more control in general over your life choices, circumstance, regardless of circumstance. Is that right?
Mostly, yeah. So I started to exercise, which was something I had never done in my life.
You started to exercise, which is something you hadn't done for most of your life.
No, not that I hadn't done for most of my life. I never exercised. You know, other kids did sports and stuff. I did not do sports.
So I see the change as far as food. Why the inspiration to start exercising?
Because it was the, you know, going to the doctor and having to say, wow, you're down 30 pounds. Because I mean, it started at 210 pounds. Again, I didn't care. But when I went to the doctor, I was 180 pounds. And she was like, wow, what are you doing? And I was like, well, I stopped eating dairy and eggs. And ironically, she told me that I was just going to gain weight because I had polycystic ovarian syndrome. And then you can't eat carbs, whatever. It's a bunch of bullshit. Obviously, that wasn't true. But yeah, it was seeing that and realizing like, oh, maybe I could actually do something about my body, health. Okay. Maybe I could change something. Mm-hmm. Going to the gym, like I joined a gym. And I just did the elliptical. That's all I did. It was the elliptical because it's all I knew how to do. But my body did keep changing. While in hindsight, I wish I had done things differently with my fitness journey. I wish I had started strength training earlier. I wish I had not dieted so hard in the beginning. But again, this was the first time like I felt like I had control of something. But this sort of snowballed into other areas of my life. It started to be like, oh, I can also learn how to like take care of myself. I can learn how to do my laundry more regularly. I can learn how to groom myself better. I can learn how to keep my apartment clean. All of these little tiny disciplines, again, things most people learn much younger than I did. I started to feel the motivation to be able to do that. I started to have the confidence in myself and my own ability to be able to do those things.
Yeah, okay. So you were able to do the things on paper that made you a healthier person, healthier choices, lifestyle change. Arguably, this helped with your mental health in terms of your mindset. As far as how you truly felt, maybe that's something that didn't catch up with you until later on in life, right? When you have to like work through the stuff that you never really worked through.
Yeah. At the time, I wasn't thinking about any of this stuff in like the grander scheme, right? It was just like, oh man, look at me doing my laundry like a responsible person. Because being raised the way that I was raised, and you know, there's lots of little bits in here that I've left out. I mentioned that I was really good at school, which meant that I was in all of the advanced classes. And, you know, typically speaking, many of the kids who are in the advanced classes, they're pretty well off. Their parents have been able to afford tutors and teaching them, and they've been able to stay home and teach their kids more. Like, this is not just me making stuff up. Like, it's a true generalization. I was like the poor kid in the class with all the rich kids. I was the dirty kid in the class of all of the really well-groomed, clean kids. I grew up basically thinking that I was a piece of shit, that I was white trash on the bottom of someone's shoe, the worst of the worst. And this was reflected in some of the people that I hung out with who their lives went down very different paths than mine did eventually. Being older and learning how to take care of myself and actually do things to better my life, it was hard to do those things because deep down I didn't feel like I had any business doing any of this. Like, I had no business joining a gym or being vegan or eating well. Like, what? That's for those fancy pants rich kids. That's not what you do, Danny. You're supposed to be smoking butts and like drinking by 3 in the afternoon. That has taken me my whole life to move past that sort of mindset. And I'll still catch myself in it sometimes. And I know you know that. And sometimes I can't even see it.
Which is fine, right? Nobody's perfect. We all have flaws that shouldn't be worked through. And realizations and aha moments that make us realize just how much we've changed or what our potential is. Yeah, definitely a lot of important pieces of the puzzle here that I've missed out on over the years because of those stories that are easier to tell. So thanks for sharing.
Yeah, I mean, I know that you know all of this stuff. Like, you have heard all of these stories.
Not all million. Of
it. I mean, yeah, you have. And you've heard them from different perspectives because you've heard them from my brother and my sister and friends from when I was younger who will corroborate some of these stories. I was a pretty wild child. I think that it really does today. You know, I'm going to be 36 in a couple of weeks. It still plays a huge role in the way that I view what we do, in the way that I view coaching. You know, I see so many coaches or motivators or whatever out there just talking to everybody like they're equal. Like everybody started in the same place. Like everyone started at the same start line. So you don't have any excuses because so-and-so did this and that and the other. And I just think that is like the shittiest thing. And because most of my peers today are very, very different. You know, most of my peers are well-to-do fitness professional, vegan activist, just like all around amazing human beings. And I know some of them have backgrounds that are closer to mine than to yours. Largely, mostly pretty good, well-rounded upbringings. And when you're talking to people that have these different sort of mindsets ingrained in them, this lower confidence, this lower self-esteem that has been beaten into them since they could think. You're talking to a different person, and you need to recognize that there are hurdles that a meal plan and a training plan are not going to fix.
We're saying that you should just do the thing because you should be motivated, and we're all in this together because you can become more fit and more active, and through repetition and habit and routine, you'll just get there. There will be no mental blocks. You just got to do the thing.
Exactly. That shit makes my skin crawl, and I cannot stand it. And I am not inspired when I see it. Not at all. Like this just push through all the pain bullshit. That is not going to do it. That's not going to do it for me. On the flip side, and this is where I also kind of struggle with myself, is I do believe that almost anybody is capable of change. Deep, real, life-changing change, if you want it, if you're willing to work for it. None of that stuff that I did was easy. Not one thing there came naturally. Not one goddamn thing. And I'm not talking about just like eating my vegetables and getting my protein up. I'm talking about like learning how to wash your hands every time you went to the bathroom, like as an adult. Consider that, if you will. Every single one of those things was hard. This is not if I can do it, anybody can do it, because I also recognize that I myself have certain privileges that other people don't. My childhood was horrific, but I'm also white. I'm also able-bodied. I'm also intellectually gifted. Like I learn very quickly. I don't have any learning disabilities. That's a better way to put it. And not everybody has those things. So this isn't if I can do it, anybody can do it. The things that I've seen in my life really do lead me to believe that if you choose to make a big change, you can do it. You can change in spite of all of that bullshit behind you. You can change. You can't expect it to happen overnight. You're gonna have to work your butt off for it, but you can do it. But I also think you have to acknowledge those things and where you came from, because if you just try to pretend that they're not there and they didn't happen, it's gonna come get you. It will, and it's happened to me many, many times, and I suspect it will continue to happen to me. I'll think I'm past something and then something will happen. You guys remember a couple years ago, we ended up with the kids, Daisy and Desmond, my niece and nephew, and I won't get into the details, but you can imagine that the reason that that would happen is not great. Having them brought everything back. Brought everything right back to the surface, stuff that I thought was long gone. You know, you just have to be aware of that, that when you've been through something, it's a part of you, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. These are bad things that happened. These are not good things. These are not things I would wish on anybody. But you can also use those struggles, those adversities, to help you be stronger in the future, and maybe you can even use them to help other people in the future.
Yeah, that's beautifully said, and I feel like helping others tap into that without forcing it, especially when it comes for them, when you're looking to create change and get them to do a 180 and change your life, I feel like that's the real value in the story you tell and the work that we get to do here with clients and reaching out to those who aren't clients but are part of the community or somehow find their way to us through our audience. I also wonder how this perspective that you have, as far as what your story has made you capable of, how this affects what you see in others, both clients and also other fitness professionals. Like, how do you see them through this lens that you have?
I like to think that I just see everybody differently because nobody's the same, right? But there are traits that I can recognize in lots of people. And it's, you know, it's a generalization, of course, but if somebody has like low self-esteem or low self-worth, or they keep sabotaging themselves over and over again, it's usually pretty safe for me to say, like, this person's been through something. Like, you don't just wake up like this. And likewise, or rather on the flip side, there are some people like you who know their worth. They know their value. They know that they're capable of great things and that they have to put their mind to it, their pen to the paper, their foot to the pavement, however you want to put it, but that they can do it. Usually that tells me one of two things. Either like, wow, this person's family like really did right by them. They did a good job here. Or this person has done a tremendous amount of work on themselves to get there. Or both.
Or if I could deprecate for a second, as far as the challenges, that person can be disillusioned and not actually put the work in and think that they're putting the work in.
That is also very, very true. That's true. I don't see that as much, though. People who think that they're working super, super hard and it's like, oh, come on now.
They're out there, though.
I know that they are out there, but I don't think those, I mean, I don't think those are people in our community.
Doing the wrong kind of work, not critically thinking because they're just plowing ahead fearlessly because they believe that they're able.
Yeah. And I don't say this to imply that somebody who was like, quote unquote, raised well doesn't have their own struggles. Absolutely. Of course, everybody has their struggles. And we can talk about that when we do your version of this. But, you know, I'm grateful for you because in so many ways, you have held up this weird funhouse mirror to me over the years to stuff like I thought it was normal. Me and my brother talk about this all the time, how we'll bring certain stories or anecdotes up. And like we bring them up like they're totally normal and so we'll get a side eye in the room like, what, you guys didn't do that? And then we realize just how not normal some of the things that we experienced were. You know, you are that for me. You have shown me like, oh, wow, interesting story. Not normal, not good or okay at all, but thank you for sharing that with me. And also sort of modeling what did a healthy family look like? What do healthy conversations sound like? And yeah, there's just a lot of things that you have done and shown me that are much, much healthier than the way that I would have done them. And I'm not talking about diet and exercise or anything. I'm talking about like the way you live life. Like, oh, this is, so here's where you are. Here's where I'd like to be. Wow, look at that gap at the middle. That's a lot more work that I have to do. Because, you know, there's that saying like you are a combination of the five closest people to you. Something like that. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. For most of my life, the five closest people to me were not people that I really wanted to be that much like. And now I feel like the people closest to me are people that I would like to be like. And yeah, you're one of them. So obviously, that's why I married you, so that I could be like you.
That's right. You always said you wanted to be the one to marry me. I beat you to it, but
in a very, very broad sense, Giacomo's the optimist. I am the pessimist. I think I've come a long way. I think I'm more of a realist. But between the two of us, I am definitely the more pessimistic, the more risk averse, the more worried about what could happen, what could go wrong, what this person could say to us or do to us. Like, I'm the more cautious because that is what my upbringing has taught me. And you are more trusting and excited and hopeful. We've mentioned it on this podcast like a million times, just how fundamentally different we are. And this is part of the reason why.
Can I quote Paula Abdul and just say opposites attract?
We're not that opposite. Our ethics are very much not opposite. But I hope that this gives a little bit of insight into the way that I coach anyway, and we'll get to Giacomo's eventually, but the way that a lot of vegan proteins philosophies were formed, they come from this background of not, like, huge transformation. Like, I always show before and after pictures, like, huh, but it's like a joke compared to the real transformation that happened, which was insane and still continues to blow my mind today. I like pinch myself all the time. Like, is this really me? Is this really my life? Is this really what I was able to turn that shit pile into? And it's like, yeah, I was. And now I want to help other people do the same thing, not just with their physiques, but with as much of their lives as possible.
And perhaps it's helpful for them to know a little more about you for context so that they get an idea of a better understanding of our approach. I feel like when it comes to our clients, the more we know them, the better it gets. So hopefully by them knowing you better, that can also hold true.
I guess I'm still real nervous that I can't pay any attention to you editing this and putting this out because I'll freak out and be like, nope, don't put it out there. Take it down. I don't like it. This will be the last time I hear any of this. So I hope you guys enjoy it. Let's move on to our much lighter Q&A. So this was actually a question that was sent to me in my DMs. I already answered him and sent it on his way and helped him out, but this showed up in my DMs. I'm 17 years old. I've been to the gym once, but I was laughed at by a few people, and since then I'm very scared of that place. I don't know how to overcome this fear, and I would like to start training at home, but I don't know if it's a good idea. The nearest gym is 17 miles away, and my closest friends call me a fat pig, a tanker, a mountain of a fat and lazy person. I don't know where I should start. Would it be possible to give some advice?
Yes. First off, that is awful and not weird that your buddies, colleagues, if you will, attacked you like that. Bullying is something that unfortunately is all too common when it comes to growing up, and you have less than no control over when it happens, and you also don't necessarily have control on how you react and respond to it. What you can do, however, is you can stay active. You can show up in these places again. You know, just give yourself time. You know, I don't feel like it's one of those scenarios where it's like, oh, okay, you got name called and laughed at when you went to go train. Just go there. Just prove them wrong. Just go there and do it. I don't think that is necessary for you to be active. What I do feel like you can do, though, is to not let that discourage you from training, not let that discourage you from finding a way to continue to move your body. And, you know, you don't have to internalize all that. What happened to you was very real, and it'll probably sit with you for a long time. However, what you can do is continue to focus on what you wanted to get out of it for yourself, right? You want to be active, you want to be healthy, you want to be stronger. In some ways, you'll wind up building up armor. That armor is muscle. It's kind of nice because this is the way I think of it. I remember an interview earlier last year where I was like, you know what? I put muscle on my body as a result of ignoring and having a safe place outside of the bullying that I encountered as a child. And that muscle that's on my body, that's mine. I own that. Nothing and no one can ever take it away from me. And they never will be able to. When you think about let the hurt fuel you. Who cares, right? Why hide from it? Why keep it a secret? Take it and use it as motivation to build yourself up stronger, your physical self, right? And again, nothing and no one can take that away from you, regardless of how bad those moments felt and regardless of how those moments might play out in the future, right? Because being hurt sucks and it shouldn't happen, but it did. So yeah, my recommendation, you can train at home and don't be afraid to eventually get back into the gym as well when you feel safe enough to do so. Don't let those bullies discourage you from going out and training again. And here's a question for you, Danny. With all of the salmonella and E. coli in greens again lately, does anyone have any tips on washing your greens and keeping them fresh and crisp? It seems like when I wash them, they get all wilted and yucky.
Oh, I love this question because it's so lighthearted. So a couple of things I would recommend for washing your greens and keeping them as crisp as possible. The first recommendation I would say is get a salad spinner. We haven't used ours in quite a long time, but a salad spinner is awesome. You fill the bucket with your greens and water, you wash them with your hands, and then you drain the water, but then you spin the top of it and the centrifugal force pulls all of the water off of it and it gets it mostly dry. Then when you go to store it, I would recommend storing it in like a Tupperware container with paper towels to suck up some of the moisture. That's what I would do. I wouldn't leave it like damp in a plastic bag or in a plastic clamshell. It's gonna get really gross really quickly. But if you put it in some kind of Tupperware surrounded by paper towels, so it's not touching the edges, that usually helps a lot. And then use them quickly. Oh, and lastly, I would say don't set your fridge to be too cold. This is something that we've dealt with since we moved. Our fridge is just automatically set to be a little bit too cold. So the greens kind of freeze in the fridge and then they get wilty and rubbery and gross and chewy and nasty. So make sure your fridge is cold, but not so cold that it freezes anything in your crisper drawer.
Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. Feel free to stay in touch with us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all of the socials. And also, don't forget to pick up your free copy of 5 Ingredient Vegan Recipe Guide. That link is in the show notes below. Once again, my name's Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And we'll see you soon. Taking me for granted again.